Page 54. This is about the future tense. So, this is how what it looks like. You have it on page 54 there. You have a little table there. So the way you distinguish the future is by the double S that you have in there. The double S occurring just before the ending, you know, the T ending, the whatever. It's always just before the ending there. So usually it's either I double S or E double S. And that's how you know it is the future. And then once you know it's the future, you translate using will in English. So he will go, he will teach, he will be, he will share, etc. He will get. So that's how you recognize it, and that's how you translate it. It's really reasonably straightforward here. And then you have on page 55, just for reference, I'll just go through this, even though it is not kind of very important, but it's good to sort of have it in the back of the mind that there are other, that these factors are, that there are these other possibilities then for the meaning of the future. Yeah. So the meanings include the expression of the probable and of the hypothetical future, as well as of certainty. Or determination or decision, it says here. Sache ahang labisami sang vibhajisami. So, if I obtain is the first one. So, that's obviously a hypothetical one. If I obtain, I will share sam vibhajisami. I will share. So, the reason why they are both in the future here is because usually when you have like a sub clause and a main clause like that, and one depends on the other one, they tend to be the same case, same tense rather. So rather than having two different tenses, they tend to be the same tense. So because the overall sense is future, the subclause, which is really more hypothetical, if I get, it also tends to get the future. So then it has obedience to law of nature and also habit, innate or acquired, may also be expressed by the future. All living beings must, will die, nikipisanti, which means to put down and throw down. So this is more, so that's quite interesting that obedience to law of nature and habit can actually be expressed by the future, not by the present tense. This is more emphatic than the use of the present tense to express an eternal truth. In other words, it's emphatic because they will do this. There's a certainty there. It may also express the emotional color of regret. That is usually in very specialized, only very specialized phrases. So indignation, disapproval may express by the future tense, usually in a phrase beginning katang hinama, for how could, how will he, whatever, do whatever. The future also expresses perplexity, surprise and wonder. For example, in king eva idang bhavisati, what can this be? Or what is this stuff? What is this? So, future passive, you can also form a future passive. So in other words, if it is a future passive, and you have to have both the aspects of passive and future in the verb. So you have here pahiyisati, so you have the is of the future, but you also have the yi of the passive. So because of that, it actually is future and passive at the same time. Right? So to translate that, you have to be careful to get things in the right order. And the way to do that is to start off with the passive usually, and then make that into a past participle. And then, so the passive is past participle, is given up, and then you put the verb to be into the future. So the verb to be, it's always a verb to be with the passive that sort of gives rise to the tense or whatever. So you put the past participle, and then the verb to be in the future will be. So will be given up, it will be given up, he will be given up, whatever. So the only thing you really need to remember of all this, and just keep the rest of it in mind for reference, is that you recognize the future by the double S, you translate it using the will in English, and that's really enough. That's all you need to remember from this one, and then you are pretty much in business. Okay, then comes something which is quite a bit more complicated, and that's the genitive case. And the reason why it is a little bit complicated is just because it's used in many different ways, and you have to understand these separate ways of usage. But the most general usage of the genitive is that it is a case of ownership. So anything which is like any owner, any having, any is always phrased in terms of or made up in terms of using the genitive in the Pali. Yeah. So, what it says here is that the genitive may often be transmitted by of and serve as a possessive case. That's what I mean by ownership, possessive. So if you see the genitive ending, if you put the of in there, normally you get the translation comes out straight away. Yeah? It almost always works with the genitive case. And that is the easy thing with the genitive case, that it always the of preposition almost always works in translations. He says that the two main characteristics are to be distinguished, denoting the possessor, or the whole of which the related word denotes a part. So for example, if you have a part of the group is genitive. Of the group is the whole, and part is the part, obviously. But we don't need to really need to worry about that, because it's really irrelevant. He's just making distinctions which are not really necessary to think about. Because both cases you use this translation of, and it comes out nicely. You don't really have to think in those terms at all. Okay, and then you have the inflections of the genitive coming down the bottom here. And these are what you need to know to some extent to be able to know whether something is in the genitive case. So you have the genitive case here is of loco, is locassa. And the asa ending is one of those very common endings for a genitive case. So when you see asa, usually you can assume that it's a genitive case. You have lokana. The anang ending is a plural ending. Yeah. So that is the genitive plural. That means, it means of the worlds. Of the worlds. The first one is of the world, it's of the worlds. And you have chittasa, so here you have a neuter noun. And with a neuter noun, it's the same ending again. For the genitive, chittasa means of the mind. That's how you translate it, of the mind. Chittana, of the minds, plural. So these are the things you need to... I actually should probably give you a table of all the endings. So do you have a table of endings? Is that a good idea? Huh? Because it's actually very hard to remember all these things. If you had a table like this, would that be helpful?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah? Nobody has this one yet? No? I'll give you a table. Get the table like that, because it's very handy to have, actually. Because... Oh, you have it in the back of the book? Okay. That's very wise, yeah. This has been made up by... Very diligent. Okay, on page 56, we have further genitives, and this is the genitive of the feminine noun. Kata is a feminine noun. The genitive there is kataya, the ya ending. The ya ending is a very, you see it again and again for the feminine noun. So it's an ending for the genitive, for the instrumental, and also for other cases. So you see it all the time, which makes it difficult to distinguish which case it actually is. Then you have bhagava. Now bhagava is actually the stem there is an ant stem, the bhagavan, stem as the present participle. And for that one, the genitive is bhagavato. The to ending there, it's like the genitive ending here. That is quite rare, it usually only occurs with present participles. Raja, genitive is a ranyo. This is the rajang, this is the kind of an ending noun, ranyo. And then Brahma, all of these nouns are pretty rare, they only occur once or twice. It's a kind of very tiny group of one or two nouns, really. Brahma is a brahmano, is a genitive ending here. Then we have ahang. Ahang is more important because this now we're coming to the pronouns. These actually occur quite a bit. And you have the genitive is mama or me. Me is the enclitic form. Enclitic means that it doesn't stand at the beginning of a sentence. It stands usually as the second word of a sentence. Mama. So that means of me. In other words, mine. If you want to say mine in Pali, you say mama or me. Then you have maya, which is we, and we have amhaka, which then means of us, in other words, ours in English. It's an exact equivalent to ours. because you're even in English you have certain genitives. You know, mine is a genitive word. My car, my is a genitive word. It is mine. It is of me. Yeah, certainly my is more appropriate actually. It is my car. It's our car. Tava is of you. That's yours. Is what that one is. Tumhe is yours plural. And so tad. So this is actually that or it. Depending on the context, so this is of it or of that or of this is what all of these ones mean coming down here now. And then the plural pesan is of those, of them, possibly. That's roughly what all of those are roughly in that same ballpark. Okay, so then it says that usually the genitive word immediately precedes the word to which it relates. So for example, Ranyo Tupo means the king's monument, or if you translate we're using of, the monument of the king is what that means. So because it is about ownership, remember it's about possession, it means that there is a word which is being possessed, right? So or the word that it must always relate to something when you have the of, it must always something it relates to, there's two words relating to each other. And that word that it relates to is always next to the genitive word, which makes it easy to recognize when you read the sentence.
How do you, if you don't know, like some of these words seem to be changing a lot, like I am, if it's outside, if you don't remember, how would you start looking for it?
This one, table. This is why this one is so useful. It has all the tables for the nouns here,
yeah.
And it has all the pronouns in the back.
Yeah.
So you just start looking in there. So you have to have some idea where to look, of course. That's the problem. Okay, and then we have the he says here that a construction with a possessive genitive is very often equivalent to an English construction with a verb to have, because it's possessive. In English, one of the ways of making a possessive is to use the verb to have. Right? He has a car. In English, Pali would say the car of him, and if you use the asa ending, tassa car. How do you say it in Pali? In English, you can translate that with the verb to have. And there isn't really any verb to have in Pali, which is interesting to know. And if a verb is required in that sort of sentence, you add the verb to be instead. Some examples here are idang asa hoti, literally this. Of him there is, of him there is this. In other words, he has this. And a very important usage of the genitive, which is not very obvious, is tassa evan hoti, which you see quite a lot in the sutras. And this is actually means he thinks thus, he thinks this. Quite literally, of him there is thus, right? Tassa, of him, evan, thus, hoti, there is. Of him, thus there is. And it's an idiom which actually means he thinks this, or he perceives this, or he is aware of this. I mean, any of those things, he's aware, he perceives, he thinks. So it is a very kind of broad idiom. It's basically the contents of his mind, in a sense, that comes afterwards. And whatever is appropriate as the contents of the mind, whether it's perceiving, thinking, or being aware, goes in there afterwards. And then it comes with a T, so there's he tassa evang hoti, of him there is thus, and then it's like a colon if you like, and you have whatever he thinks and the T at the end. That's how it works. So then we have, as noted in lesson 8, an idiom consisting of the genitive of the word denoting the period plus achayena expresses the time after which something is done. So you have sat ahasa achayena pabajisama, means pabajisama means I will go forth, right? You have pabajati, the verb to go forth, and you have the plural you have the future is ending there, and then you have ama, which is the first person plural, so we will go forth. And then you have sat ahasa, which means satta is seven, aha is days, which means 7 days, and then you have the genitive there, so literally means something of 7 days. And Atsayena means after. So we will go forth after 7 days. And the genitive meaning is lost here, because it doesn't actually, you can't translate this with of, because this is idiomatic use of the genitive. So this is sometimes you have these idiomatic uses which don't actually translate naturally with using the of, but it's very rare. Usually the of works in 95% of cases. So of is always the right way of trying to translate the genitive. This is an idiomatic exception right here. And then you have another one, Mama Achayena, again using Achayena, actually means after me, after I have passed away, after my death. I wonder whether there's a way that this can be put in genitive in English, after, so that it makes more sense. Because obviously in Pali it makes sense somehow that we have genitive there. After her. Maybe at the end or something like that. I will go forth at the end of 7 days. Then you get the of there. Maybe that's one way of putting it. After, at the end of. And then you have the of in English as well. After me, maybe it means at the end of me or something. I don't know. That sounds a bit strange. Okay. So then that is basically the use of the genitive, the ordinary genitive use, and always translate using of. Now we come to another usage of the genitive, and this is a much more specialized use and much more rare in the suttas, but it's good to have it in the back of your mind anyway, because it certainly occurs sometimes in the suttas. So he says here that it can be used, the genitive can be used quite loosely when position is unnecessary. And this usage here is what he calls a more loose usage. And he says that since the nouns include participles, we quite often find the participle in its verbal function, in other words, equivalent to a finite verb, preceded by a noun in the genitive, expressing either the agent or the patient of the action of the participle. This is often called the subjective genitive or objective genitive, respectively. So this is, I won't actually, the rest of this is not really necessary to read, so let's skip that and just go straight to the examples so you have some idea what's going on here. So example of the agent genitive, brahmanasya pujito, you have here, pujito means like to be honored or worshipped, and brahmanasya means literally of the Brahmin. But in this case, you have because you have the past participle here, and brahmanasya can actually be what is called an agent genitive. So it actually is an agent rather than have its ordinary genitive sense. So actually it means something like honored by the Brahmin. In other words, it's equivalent to an instrumental. And the point here, of course, is that pujito is a past participle, and because it is a past participle, the agent is in the instrumental. Or, as in here, it can also be in the genitive in certain cases. And that's what you have here. Here you have a past participle with an agent in the genitive case. These are constructions that do sometimes occur. Not very frequent, but they do occur sometimes. And then you have another one, just afterwards. Yesang Deva Aditta. And this is a similar kind of construction. You have here Deva Aditta. Aditta means not seen. And it's a past participle again, so which means that the agent should be usually in the instrumental. But here, you find the agent is actually again in the genitive. And yesang here is a pronoun which means of whom. We haven't actually come across these pronouns yet, but that's what it means, of whom. So of whom, or because it is an agent, it actually is by whom. So by whom, not seen. And then the devas are here, because the devas are in the nominative, and they agree with the past participle, they are actually here the patient of the sentence. So, by whom? The devas are not seen. By whom? The devas are not seen. By whom are not seen the devas? That's how you would translate that. And then you have a patient and a devas at the bottom here. So this is a case where the patient of a verb or verbal noun is in the genitive case. So ahang yajeta, yajeta is here a verbal noun which means to sacrifice. So it means something like I was I am the sacrificer, and then you have tassa yanyasa. Actually, in this case, you don't really need to worry about it as an aged patient benefit, because it actually reads very well as an ordinary patient. I was the sac. No, sorry, it reads very easily as an ordinary genitive rather. I was the sacrificer of that sacrifice, right? The of construction works very well there. You don't actually need to worry about the fact that it might be grammatically called a patient genitive. The of construction is easily enough to use. The patient genitive is very, very rare, and I wouldn't even worry about remembering it. The agent genitive is slightly more common. So that might be worth just keeping at least in the back of your mind. Okay, then he has some other things here, which he said the genitive is also regarded as a substitute for instrumental, etc. But all of this is really, if you translate it using of, it always works out very nicely. So if you take the example there, kumbing purang suvanasa, you have here, purang means full, and suvanasa means of gold, which is very easy in English. Full of gold is not a problem. A pot full of gold, literally. And then he has that the genitive is also used with certain indeclinables. So there are certain words which, like, take the genitive. When you see those words, you know that the genitive will come with them. One of them is pitito, which means behind. Now, if you translate pitito instead of behind as at the back of, then you can see why it's genitive. At the back of somebody, then the genitive works. Purato means in front of or before. If you translate as in front of, again you can see why the genitive must go with that one. In front of, and then you expect a word in the genitive because of the of, right? At the back of, you expect a word in the genitive because of the of. Antarena means between, and you can maybe translate that as in the middle of, so again using of, so you can see why the genitive is used. So you can say kayana antarena, you can translate that as in the middle of the bodies, in the middle of the groups of these collections, or between the bodies. So sometimes you just have to be a little bit inventive with how you translate, and you can actually understand why the idiom actually is the way it is in Pali here. And then you can find English equivalents that are very close to that. At the back of, in the middle of. And then you have position. Then you also have Uttaram Nagarasa, north of the city. Again, it's very obvious. It's not very hard. So the beauty of all this is that the of translation works almost all the time. All you have to do is recognize the genitive and then put the of in there, and you are in business. And all this other stuff becomes pretty redundant and something you don't really have to worry about. Then we come to one last thing, which is occurs not all that regularly either, but it does occur, so it is useful to have at least again at the back of your mind. And this is something called the genitive absolute. And this consists of a noun or pronoun followed by a participle, and both of them are inflected in the genitive case. So there's a noun and the participle, both inflected in the genitive case. And he says that this nexus, in other words, these two words, he calls it nexus because they relate to each other, stands apart from the other words of the sentence and means something like while. So he, in this case, the genitive means while. While the noun was doing the participle. While the agent was doing the verb. And the important point here is that this kind of genitive absolute is like a separate sentence which stands apart from the rest of the sentence. So it's like a subordinate clause. It's a clause which comes at the beginning. It's subordinate to the main sentence, but it has a separate agent for the main sentence. I mentioned before, often in the Pali you have like this whole sequence of verbs. You have like the gerund or the absolutive. You have all these kind of things. And all the time the agent is the same for all the verbs. Now this is a case where that's not the case. Here, the separate agent for the verbs. And that's why it's called an absolute clause, or absolute genitive, because absolute, it stands apart completely. I think that's the idea behind that kind of terminology. And it means basically while. So when you have that, when you have those two things coming together, a noun and a verb, both in the genitive case, then you know that it's very likely to be an absolute, genitive absolute. And you translate it as something like while such and such was happening, or maybe when such and such was happening. Yeah. So he has some ideas of under here showing you how this may be translated. Often the genitive absolute has a special sense of disregarding, despite the noun doing the participle. As when the participle means seeing or looking on. Ke lasta jaya manasa, while the oil is burning. Or we have mata pituna rudantana. So what is happening here? Let me explain this in a little bit more detail, because I'm going a bit too fast now. Let's take te lasa, jaya manasa, and analyze this more carefully. So what you have here is you have te la, which means oil, and then you have the asa ending, which makes it genitive. So straight away you think, okay, this might mean something like of the oil, right? So because of the air. And then you have jaya manasa. Jaya is the verb to burn. And manasa, mana there, is the present participle. So this means actually burning. And then you have asa ending, which makes the genitive. So it means something like of burning. But what you have here really is you have a noun and a participle together. Tela and jayamana. And the tela is the agent of the burning. That's actually what's being burnt here. Or you can see it's the patient. Because it's being burned. But the point is that these are working together. So, because of that, the genitive loses the idea of, and instead you translate it as something as while. So you get while the oil is burning, or while the oil was burning. Yeah. That's what you get from that. Yeah. Does that make sense? The oil is burning. Then you have another one further. You have mata pitunam rudantanam pabajito. So here you have the genitive absolute here are the first two words. You have mata pitunam here. Mata pitunam literally means mother and father. And the nang ending here is a genitive again. So it means, it's a genitive plural ending. So it means of mother and father. That's what the first thing means literally. Rudantana is a present participle. Rudati means to cry, so it means crying. And again, you have the anang ending, which is a genitive plural. So it agrees with mata pitunang, which also is plural. So because of that, you have this becomes then, instead of having a genitive meaning, it has the meaning while mother and father were crying, while mother and father are crying. And then pabajito, he went forth.
So they don't have to come together. This shows that they're separated in the sentence, the dots.
That's the other thing, which makes it difficult. They can be separated. There can be other words inserted there, which makes it longer. So there can be quite long clauses with other words as well included in the clause. So it can be complicated. But I mean, hopefully the exercises aren't too complicated. That's what you can hope for. But often that is a vain hope, as they say. Okay, so that is the genitive absolute. The genitive absolute is useful for constructing a sentence with two agents, but the similarly constructed locative absolute, which we'll come to later on, is much more frequently used, not being restricted to special circumstances. Okay, so let me just briefly summarize what you need to remember from this chapter. The most important thing that you need to remember is obviously how to recognize the genitive ending, which is the asa and the anang, etc. So some recognition is useful, and then just know that when you see that ending, you just translate with of. You know the meaning of the word, and you put of in front because of the ending, genitive ending. So that is the first one. And then the second thing that you can do, and just keep at the back of your mind, the fact that sometimes genitive is used for agents. If the verb is a participle, you can have an agent of the past participle. And sometimes you have something called the genitive absolute, in which a verb, usually a participle, and the agent of that verb come together, and they actually don't have a genitive meaning at all. They mean something like why or when. It means something completely different. It's called the genitive absolute. So keep those in the back of your mind. But the most, far the most important thing to remember is simply translate with of and use that words very well. Okay, so let's go through some of the vocabulary. So we have the verb arahati, and this is a verb which is directly related to arahant. It means to deserve. It also means he ought to do. But so you can see from that that an arahant is often translated as a worthy one, because he deserves, right? He's deserving, basically.
Oh, so
yeah, deserving. Arahant is literally the present participle of arahati, arahant, the ant ending, the present participle ending. So it means like deserving, here. In other words, worthy. That's why that translation comes in. Yeah. You have kilamati, which means to become tired. You have rudati, which we saw before, which means to weep. He weeps, rudati.
What is it with the nostrils?
That is an extremely good question, which I don't even remember. I think there must be something with that verb, which is the reason why it has an asterisk there. I can't even, he probably says it in here somewhere, but exactly where he says it, I don't actually know.
It's not because of that genitive,
Rudati. Let's see if we can find some sort of Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember it.
The asterisk and then the error. A construction called the genitive absolute consists of the noun. So I don't know why they did that.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I
think it's something else. Yeah. I don't know whether it's sorry. I doubt it's very, very important. Vijati, he fans. Some of these verbs are very rare, you don't come across them very often.
Giving air.
Giving air, yeah. Sobati, he makes it clear. But sobati also means to shine. So it has this double meaning, to shine, to make clear. Then you have couple more. Pujati, well, this is the verb which is the same as the word puja, so you do a puja. So it means like to honor or to worship, right? You do a puja. Veteti means to wrap, or it means also mean to like to refute, I think, as well. Yeah. And that's nibeteti, yeah. So probably to wrap. Yeah.
What do you wrap? You wrote?
What do you wrap? Veteti. Don't know. Find that soon. Yeah. I don't think it's robes, no. Robes is something else. It's completely different. Yeah,
it wraps the king's body in a garment.
Okay, that might be almost like a mummy. You wrap it around, because that probably is a cremation thing. Oh. I think.
Okay. So yeah. You don't wrap your robes.
No, the robes nivaseti is putting on the lower robe. It's called nivaseti, and the upper robe is paru. How does that word go again? It's a completely different word. Yeah, I recognize it when I see it, but it's can't. Come off. Yeah. So then you have some nouns here. You have anto, and this means like side or end or extreme. And this is the word you have when you, for example, do the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. You have dve ante na pabajjena sevitaba. These two extremes, or these two ends, are not to be practiced by somebody gone forth. And you have the perception, for example, of the immaterial attainments. They're called ananta akasa, which literally means space without end. Sometimes translated as infinite, but I think infinite is the wrong idea. It's not really infinite, but doesn't have an end, which is quite a different concept than infinite. So that's anto. That's a very important word, actually. It occurs a lot in the Sutta. It has many idiomatic meanings as well. So that's an important one to keep in mind. Jayo, victory. Daso, slave. Daso is one of those words that often used in names for monks. You have Buddha Dasa. slave of the Buddha, Dhammadasa. Bago, share. Yanyo, sacrifice. Telang, oil. Bayang, danger. And that is quite an important word. You see it quite a lot in the suttas. Bayang can mean danger, it can also mean fear, depending on the context. Ratanang, gem, precious things. This is the same word as in the three jewels, right? The three gems of Buddhism.
Sangha Ratana.
Sangha Ratana, again, the gem of the Sangha, that's right.
What's the three jewels? Tiratana.
Yeah. That's related to all European languages. T is a three in English, trois in French, tre in Norwegian.
Tri. Tri in English is a prefix.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see all those words are actually related to each other here. And in Sanskrit is actually tree is T R I as well. Right? So you can see it's even closer in Sanskrit than to Pali.
And Anto also come an anterior in that. Anto, your first word, side. The anterior of the building is the front.
This is the inside. Anterior, okay. That might, maybe that is that the connection there? Maybe there is.
Yeah, the ante room and all that.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
It's come from the Greek.
Possibly. Okay. Yep. Okay. Then you have sarira, which means body, but it usually means the body in the sense of the dead body. It can also mean the living body, but this is a very kind of word which just means the physical body, nothing else. Whereas the word kaya has a much wider kind of sense. It means like groove or a conglomeration of something or whatever. Whereas sarira is just physical body, and it also means like the dead physical body, and also for that reason also means relics sometimes. Yeah.
Does it have different word for relics though?
Dhatu is another word for relics, it's very common in the commentaries.
Yeah.
Then you have suvanang, gold, and literally the meaning of that is good color. It's quite literally the meaning. Vanna is color, and su is good. Su is one of these prefixes you find for nouns all the time. It means good. Du is bad. So for example, even with dukkha and sukha, they are actually related to those prefixes. Sukha is happiness, good. Dukkha is bad.
So when they talk about Buddha's golden colored skin, that means he had a good colored skin.
Yeah, but it actually also means gold color as well. It means gold color. Yeah.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
Why would you translate that one?
Because Suvannang has acquired the meaning of gold. You can say that the root of it is a good color, but the actual, you know, it's like in English. I mean, there are many words which may have, you know, might originally come from something else, but then they acquire a certain meaning.
Isn't it kind of like, you know, like would anybody have a gold colored skin? You know, for me, it makes more sense to say, you know, like
good colored.
Yeah. You know,
but it's not exactly gold, obviously, but it's kind of, you know, going that direction. You know, probably. I mean, I don't think it's exactly gold. I don't think. I would agree with that one. It obviously meant he was quite light colored. It wasn't very dark.
That's what I mean. Maybe. Yeah.
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 That's what it means. Yeah. It's interesting. Maybe it could mean just good color. Huh? Yeah, that's a good point actually.
Isn't it like you in the lower caste if you were really dark skinned, and you know higher caste if you're low skinned?
That's the idea.
So maybe it was, you know, they were saying that, oh, he's got a good color. He's, you know, he might be a high.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. Yeah. Antarena means between. Indeclinable. These are indeclinables now, so these are things which are always exactly the same. Chira, for a long time, after a long time. Pana, but, or however. Pana is one of those words which sometimes doesn't need to be translated. It's just like, sometimes it has more meaning than ko, but sometimes it doesn't have that much meaning. Yeah. Then you have pittito and purato, which we just saw in the text, meaning behind and in front of the, or at the back of and in front of. And then you have a past participle, arōpita, disproved. Disproved is one meaning of that word. It has other meanings as well there. Arōpita. So there you are. So that is the genitive case for you now. Genitive case. It's hard to say genitive case.
There's this idiom, I don't know if I should turn this in, it's really confusing, but
In American English, I don't think anybody else uses it for time. You say 10 of 6. Nobody else seems to use that, but Americans, and like if you say it like the Sri Lankans, they don't know what you mean.
A 10 of 6?
10, like 7 10. Of 6.
Sorry? Ten of six. Oh, 10 to 6, basically.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Oh, you know, you understand it.
You, the way you said it, you have a funny pronunciation there. You said ten of six.
Oh, ten.
I thought you meant a ten, like a box.
That's why I switched to it.
Yeah, 7 of 6.
15 is
15. Okay, now I understand. Yeah.
And it's sort of like there's a possessive case, and I never could figure it out, but now I sort of see. Of six, it's somehow possessive of 6 o'clock. I mean, it's not possessive of 6. 6 o'clock possesses the 10, but if the 7 or the time before it. I don't know if you know what I mean. It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
Like this one before. I don't want to waste time on the start of third. But it says, you know, that Satahasa Achayana?
Yeah.
Sort of like,
I
just thought it was an interesting similarity, you know, like, not exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly the same, but it's.
10 or 6. But sometimes also these cases are just idiomatic, you know, they're just kind of people make up things and they become stuck in people's minds, you know, and not necessarily have any direct relation to the actual case. Or the ordinary uses of a preposition. It might just be completely random uses of prepositions.
No logic.
May not be even logical. I mean, language is not always logical sometimes.
Sorry.
Yeah.